Welcome to T-Bags Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens. Go get it.
Play ball.
From Coors Field in Denver, Colorado, this is D-backs Podcast. We are the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Welcome to episode 18 as we record this. It is Tuesday, May the 5th, and the Diamondbacks have just completed a disappointing three-game series at Dodger Stadium, a series in which they very well could have won both the final two games over the weekend, but did not. We'll discuss reasons why on this show. And now we are in Denver, trying to begin the final series of this road trip by hopefully playing at least part of these scheduled three games at Coors Field, following a cold, long, rainy Monday night when we waited 2.5 hours before somebody finally pulled the plug on the series opener. And the weather here today, frankly, is worse. So we'll see what happens. Episode 18, I'm Steve Berthume. The show is back on the road.
On the road again.
Yeah, that's
Willie
Nelson. Just can't
wait to get on the road again.
A homestand that saw the Diamondbacks swept by the Pirates, during which the offense vanished, and then saw the Diamondbacks' offense break wide open, 25 runs in three games, a pair of big wins over these Rockies last week at Chase Field, we will discuss. We're in Denver, a big football town. Years ago, this was the home of the NFL's fabled Orange Crush defense. Remember those old Bronco uniforms
yes.
and the blue helmets? The Broncos of the late 70s, coached by Red Miller, won an AFC championship with Craig Morton at quarterback. One of the great rivals of those Broncos teams, the Oakland Raiders. And we note the passing of former running back, three-time Pro Bowler Marv Hubbard this week. It's interesting to look back, as we discussed during our long rain delay amongst ourselves last night, guys, at those old Raider teams.
The Raiders.
The silver and black, and John Madden, and Ken Stabler, and Cliff Branch, and Dave Casper, and Marv Hubbard, and Otis Sistrunk, and George Blandon, Phil Villapiano, and all those guys. And think about those teams, the distinct personality of those players and teams, how they won with a unique style, often playing on football fields that were half-dirt baseball diamonds, and how now the NFL seems so greatly homogenized and uniform and ordered compared to those Raider teams, like them or hate them, that were glorified by the great NFL film segments over the years. Much of the unique nature of the people and teams, it seems, in this era of corporate American sports has been lost. And as the late, great John Facenda once read, Gub, the autumn wind is a pirate blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
John Facenda.
And it's on that note that we introduce the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor, Greg Schulte.
I'm here. I'm ready to go. Let's get this game underway. Let's play some baseball. I'm tired of sitting around in rain delays.
Yeah, this is football weather here.
Yeah, it is.
Also on the program, the autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won. It's the Kingslayer, our producer, engineer, man about town, Leo Gilmartin.
I like that. It's
yeah,
always,
he knew you would.
It's always kind of a long,
yeah, eventually
winding
I get
road.
There. I get yeah. there eventually.
I wondered where he was going today.
I weave a narrative, a tapestry,
you know,
if you will.
You got to hand it to you. Last night we were in here talking about
exactly,
all those old Raider
yeah.
teams, and it started with the passing of Marv Hubbard, and you yeah. filter it right into the podcast today.
If
you
He's
think
a pro.
If you think about those teams, and because I grew up in
their
New
battles
England,
with Kansas City.
And we had great battles with the Steve Grogan Patriots teams of the late 70s in the roughing the passer call on Sugar Bear Hamilton when Ken Stabler threw the pass to Clarence Davis in the end zone and beat the Patriots late 70s. But I think there is something there with you look back at those teams playing on those half baseball fields, and now it's just so corporate and homogenized and the same. There are no Ken Stablers anymore. There are
no
Raider teams
now,
anymore.
It's the way of the world.
I think that's an excellent point. I think you're absolutely right. We're just sort of, you know, we've become rollerball in a sense. The corporations are running things.
I miss those old days.
Teams. Yeah.
I
so
miss those old
when
days.
You do get a team in any sport that has some personality, and you can go, you could use the example in basketball too, the old ABA days.
Mm-hmm.
It's all kind of the same stuff now.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of taking the personalities, kind of get.
It is what it is. You got to roll with the punches, as they say.
I mean, Marv Hubbard was an 11th round draft choice out of Colgate.
Yeah.
And he went on to run for more than 4,300 yards, sweeping and powering through defenses in the NFL's 69 through mid-70s. And you take a moment to wonder, would there be any chance in this era of televised combines and the circus carnival NFL drafts that are stretched out now into three-day-long infomercials for the league, would a Marv Hubbard even exist these days?
Nope. I'm sure there's be a lot of guys
that wouldn't have passed the measuring test.
So a timely topic considering how much the NFL draft dominated the sports headlines last weekend.
But we're about baseball.
Yeah, we are all about baseball. The D-backs were going through some drama of their own in Los Angeles. Let's start in L.A. I thought obviously disappointing to go in there and get swept. Monday or the Friday game, you kind of chalk it up 8-0, you know, the big grand slam. But I thought Saturday they could have won and Sunday they could have won.
Here was their problem. They scored four runs in the series. They got all four in one run in one ball game. And at the top, the order's not hitting, and Goldie was hitting. But if the rest of the guys aren't hitting one through four or even one through five, they're in trouble because we know about the bottom of the order right now. And, you know, Pacheco's getting a little bit more playing time behind the plate. Offensively, he has been pretty good. 305 hitter for the Rockies here in Denver. A few years back, fifth in the National League. So he's seen a little bit more time behind the plate. He's handled himself defensively, but there's still that struggle. Tuffy is still struggling offensively. Nick Ahmed is still struggling offensively. CO is still struggling. And Aaron Hill is struggling. And those guys are kind of in and out of the lineup. But that, to me, was a problem in the second inning for Ruby De La Rosa. You know, got him. Other than that, he was outstanding in that ballgame.
He retired 11 in his final 11 he faced after the grand slam by Jock Peterson.
But they know they can beat the Dodgers because they won two out of three when the Dodgers were healthy when they're at Chase Field. So, you know, I think they can play in the division. I think they've held their own pretty much in the division. Bert, you were mentioning, you know, the fact that they won a series against the Giants. Giants are starting to play well now. So
three or four there,
So they can handle their own. When they play well, we can see what they can do. But they, you know, they've got to get it going over a stretch. I'd love to see this club, because we haven't seen it in 2 years, have a winning streak of five or six games.
I look at the Houston Astros, who just won,
it
10 in a row?
Yeah.
Nine in a row. They're not even any good. Now, they have two.
Well, no, hold on. You can't say that.
No, you can't.
Wait a minute.
Because
you can't say the Astros.
They have two very good pitchers. Don't get me wrong. You want to give me Keuchel and McHugh, I'll take them right now.
There you go.
But it's not like they have a murderer's row and a $250 million pair. That's my point.
But they're playing together as a team.
Right. They're playing very well. 10 in a row is 10 in a row. Don't get me
wrong.
So
don't say they're not any good.
But they're not. Like, you look at the roster, and it's not like there's Adrian Gonzalez and all these guys. And look, they're playing well.
Gaddis is starting to get hot, but he's sub-200. You know, their star is Altuve.
Right.
And he's a big star.
We have a guy like Paul Goldschmidt here, and we have some others, too. They're not that far away. My point being, and I'm not articulating
I know what you're trying to say.
They're not that far away from the Houston Astros. And if the Astros can win 10 in a row, the Diamondbacks can win 10 in a row.
But they need those two studs at the top. Two guys are going to have to stick out. And you talk about McHugh, you talk about Keuchel. And Keuchel doesn't throw hard at all. And we've seen him pitch, but he just, you know, he's dazzling.
He's the number one ground ball pitcher in all of baseball.
So, you know, you got to find two guys at the top of the order who are going to give you that outing every game. Every time they start, give your ball club a chance to win a ball game. And those two guys do that every day. Diamondbacks haven't found those two guys yet.
We have guys that can be close, though.
Yeah, Chase Anderson, I think.
Cole Mentor has been. A 1-1 something.
His ERA is sub
3
now.
Starts.
Yeah.
Bradley has been that every time he's been out there. Ruby has been that in stretches. It's the big mistake pitch. You just got to avoid that.
Mm-hmm. They're there. It's just a matter of putting together and being consistent from start to start.
Look, they got beat by one bad pitch in the Friday game at Dodger Stadium. Saturday, they're playing a one-run game with the Dodgers, and they're leading late, and then the bullpen lets it get away. Yeah. And then a 0-0 pitcher's duel
that they played,
and they had opportunities to win that game on Sunday, too. So, you know, the Dodgers are 16-9 as we record this. The Diamondbacks are 10-14. But I don't see a whole lot of difference between that Dodger team and this Diamondbacks team.
Here's another thing to consider. Archie's not that far back, you know, from returning. And hopefully he's what we saw before he went out. And then some time before the All-Star break, hopefully early June, or at least mid-June, Patrick Corbin. Now, I don't know if Corbin's going to be what he was, you know, immediately. But those are two big-time young starters that the Diamondbacks can put in there and feel really good about.
No question. I think you feel, with the exception of Evan Marshall's struggles right now, I think you feel pretty good about the pitching staff as a whole.
Yeah, the bullpen's been struggling. They got off to – it's completely flipped now. The starters were not good at the beginning. The bullpen was lights out. And now the starters are really good. And certain guys in the bullpen are pitching well, but there are certain guys in the bullpen who are not pitching well.
And – there's more help coming, as you mentioned, and I
David
was
Hernandez too,
and I was so impressed Sunday in L.A. with Enrique Burgos.
I know you were going there.
Coming in the way he did, two innings and just blowing guys away with that 98 mile an hour fastball and that big slider. I mean, we talked about him. We've talked about him on the show for a while now. He looked great in the spring. He might have made the ball club if they decided they didn't need some length.
Right.
You know, they needed some guys that can give you two or three innings. Burgos more of a one-inning guy, even though he went two on Sunday. But, boy, I think he's a good example of what's coming here, and there's more on the way. But that was really, really impressive on
you
Sunday.
You know, Chafin's been really good. He's a young kid. Ziegler is he's Brad Ziegler. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So the guy they need to get right is Evan Marshall, because right now he's really struggling. He's given up about double the amount of hits as innings pitched. The long ball has hurt him. His command is not quite there. He's not the Evan Marshall we saw in his rookie season.
He's throwing just as hard as ever, and the stuff seems to be there. It seems to be a command issue, just some bad locations.
Yeah.
For me, offensively, I think what's really hurt them more than anything offensively is Chris Owings' slump and Jake Lamb's injury. Because if you have the CO that we're used to in there, who's, you know, a 280 to 310-ish hitter somewhere in that range, who's hitting line drives to, you know, both gaps, that's a real weapon. And we haven't had that this year. And then when you take Jake Lamb out of the lineup with the injury, suddenly that the middle of the order where you're going really 1 through 7 suddenly becomes, you know, four or five guys at the most. It's a lot thinner, and then that bottom chunk seems to just expand on you, and then you're really looking for base hits in there 6 through 9.
And that's where the Diamondbacks were going in the spring. That's why they thought that they could tolerate the lack of offense from Tuffy and Nick Ahmed, because they would have 1 through 6 being productive game in and game
out.
But
you've lost two big parts of that
with
Chris slumping and with Jake Lamb hurt. You've lost that, and those are, you can't, if you're going to talk about, you know, a fixed number of spots, 8 spots, you can't lose two of those and have it not impact.
It's hard enough to have one guy that, you know, maybe is sub offensively, but when you've got two or three other guys struggling, you can see where the problem lies for Chip Hale trying to get that offense in there night to night.
I was sick for the Pirate series, which just...
And we're glad you're better.
Thank you. I'm mostly...
It kind of went around.
I'm mostly better. Candy is still horrible.
Yeah, Leo, I think, Leo, you're
Leo's
feeling a lot
been
better,
hurt.
Right?
I'm feeling better.
You're I think
better?
It took me the less time to get well. I was on that first road trip.
I had a sinus infection that I wouldn't wish on anybody.
We battled through it, though.
Not even a Dodger. I watched all three games at home, and what's interesting to me in the up-and-down nature of this team offensively, The offense comes in these giant bunches like we saw earlier in the year,
Hit-miss.
We saw in the Rocky series back at Chase Field. And then when it goes away, man, it goes away. And that Pirates here. Now, they had three good pitchers in
that
series. They
faced three frontline pitchers. Right,
and I think that's something that kind of gets lost. I mean, those were good pitchers.
Garrett Cole's pretty
good. Cole was
good.
Filthy.
And the other two guys have been good.
And Burnett and Liriano,
yeah.
So I think that had something to do with it in the Pirates series. But what was your observation as to what happened
there? It you know, they just didn't hit. And I take what you said, and I've run with that, and I will think we're going to have that all year. You're going to have games, and you're going to have stretches where maybe Goldie's not hitting like he's going to hit all season long. Right now, Trumbo's in a little bit of a slump, but I think he's in a right ballpark to get well again in Coors Field, where he's hit like crazy.
He's played 9 games, and he's got 7 homers.
Yeah, AJ's struggling a little bit right now. You know, Peralta's still trying to find time, and I think he's starting to come out of it. He's gotten more ball games, more at-bats of lately. Ender is Ender. You know, Ender and Goldie right now have been the two most consistent for me from the start of the season.
I think that's right.
Yeah. AJ's probably been right behind them, and Trumbo, for the most part, I think has been pretty good. The only thing we haven't really seen from Mark is a consistent long ball, but he's been squaring the ball up. He hasn't been striking out a whole lot. You know, putting the ball in play, his two-strike approach has been pretty good. I've been pretty pleased with what I've seen there, but obviously we need to see the power numbers. We need to see the home runs pick up and the RBIs pick up.
Yeah, he's got to get the ball up in the air, and then he said that's his priority. But when you look at Mark Trumbo's track record as a hitter and look at the strikeout totals, And then look at how little he's striking out this year.
Yeah, it's
there's a
big difference.
Giant improvement right there.
Your thoughts on Yasmani? I think we're seeing the Yasmani that the Diamondbacks envision, and he hit two deep balls in that one ball game in L.A. that both almost got out of there.
And both to the left side of second base, which we did not see all through spring training.
Starting to pull the ball, feeling more comfortable.
And early in the year. Yeah, he barreled up one that Peterson caught right in front of that 395 sign in dead center field in Dodger Stadium. Another one that went off the base of the wall in left center field. And when I watched Tomas and you know, on the buses and on the planes and in the clubhouse and during batting practice, he is a loose goose, man. I mean, he does not have any nerves. No. There's no tension there.
He just goes out and plays baseball. Has
and
he's fun. Seen,
there's a language barrier there, but he gets along with his teammates famously, it seems like. And there's a comfort level that just keeps going up and going up and going up. And I think you're right, Gub. The more that comfort level goes up, the more we see the offensive production. And I've really been surprised. He's only struck out four times.
Yeah, he's walked more and he's struck out.
Yeah, and this was a guy that was a free swinger in spring training and was swinging a lot of bad balls.
I talked to Dijon Watson. I did an interview, and they said that's one of the areas they're a little surprised about. They thought he would strike out a lot more, but he's striking out very few times.
He's had really good at-bats, and I think he's going to hit.
And his defense has gone better. I mean, he made that diving stop the other day in L.A. He started a double play ball. He's having – you know, I think he's got more assists playing over on the right side of the infield than he's had on the left side, to be honest with you.
And he's done a good job over there when the shift is on. He had the one error the other day that was right on the edge of the grass there. But then he had the goal line stand where he just parked himself in front of third base in front of Howie Kendrick, who came in like a fullback trying to get over the goal line.
And I guess Goldie talked to him about that. You know, he doesn't want him to get hurt. Yeah. So he tried to help him what you need to do in that situation. And that's a great teammate.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do when Jake Lamb comes back, because those are two bats that I'll say you want. I might even say you need in the lineup at the same time. I don't know how you work that out.
Well, Lamb's got to play. We've seen that. He's hitting .414.
He's a big
at the time, and he's that left-handed bat that you need in that lineup, somewhere 5-6, maybe even a 4 spot on occasion. He's a completely different hitter than what we saw when he first came up last year. They've adjusted his swing, his stance. He's solid gold at third base, so he's a guy that they've got to have in there. And they're, you know, that's a nice problem for a manager to have. Have too many players, figure out how to get them in there.
You know what? Jake Lamb's a big leaguer, okay? And we said that before. He's a really, really good rookie season just waiting to happen. Hopefully the foot thing is behind him now. The boot just came off.
At least it wasn't a stress fracture like Trumbo.
It was headed there. Yeah. It was headed there by all accounts.
They cut it off.
So hopefully now that it's healed, it's no longer an issue. But we keep saying that it's a nice problem to have. But it is a problem.
It is a problem.
And we're seeing it right now with David Peralta. David Peralta he had a great series the final two games against the Rockies at Chase Field, and then had one game where he started again, and then the at-bats went away. It is a little bit of a problem, and you can't tell me that's not affecting David Peralta.
Oh, there's no doubt.
So,
and it'll affect somebody else when Lamb comes out. Will it affect Yasmani? How do you get him in there?
It's got to get worked out somehow, and I don't know what the answer is. It's tricky, but you got to get as many of these offensive players in there as you can at one time. And I think we've seen Chip do that more and more, especially over the course of this road trip. We're going to see Jordan Pacheco play a little bit more. It's going to go from one start a week to two or three behind the plate. And, you know, we've seen when Chris Owings gets up there and swings at the first pitch every time. He sits and Aaron Hill goes in there. So I think that Chip is really making a concerted effort to get as many bats into that lineup at any given day as he can.
You mentioned the guy, and I think he is a big key to this ball club going on and getting better because, number one, he's young, he's very athletic, and we've seen what he can do, and that's Chris Owings.
He's a big one. Yeah. He's a big swing
player. And I think he'll get it
team.
Going. Right now he's scuffling, but, you know, his athleticism, watching him play second, he can also switch over to short if Nick is not in the lineup. But we saw him last year. He started out a little slow, then he picked up, and his April was absolutely terrific. We haven't seen that yet, but the one thing he started at, just a lot of little hits, little dunkers, and then he started to pull the ball and turn on the ball, and the extra base hits just kept coming in groves. So he can get there. He hasn't done that yet.
He'll hit line drives to both gaps and down both lines.
Plus, he gives you speed on the bases, so he can steal a base for you.
And you got to get some production out of the middle infield. I think you're right, Gub. He's a very key guy. Given the makeup of this team right now, Chris Owings is sort of the key swingman, if you will, as to which direction this offense is going to go. And we know he can do it. But, boy, we've seen him come up there, and he's never, ever walked at any point. And his minor league track record, almost no bases on ball. That's just who he is. But and it works for some guys. Nomar Garciaparra is a great example of that. But, boy, he goes up there sometimes swinging at a first pitch curveball in the dirt, and you just went, come on, CEO, just take one pitch. And you can see the youth there, and you can see he wants to do well and the pressure on, and guys have talked about that. Everybody's trying to pick up everybody else. And he seems to fall into that trap a little too often.
Yep. And, you know, once they get that offense going a little bit further on there, then that allows you to play the really good defensive guys and not worry about the offense.
Yeah, so it's there. It just has to come together, and hopefully it will if we get any of these games in here in Colorado, and then we're back home for four against the Padres.
Speaking of defense, how good has Tuffy been, huh?
Tuffy has been, boy, BB on the TV side just raves about Tuffy's defense. And the way he calls a game, the way he handles the pitchers, the way he blocks the balls in the dirt, the way he throws out the base runners, he has been terrific. And it's on that note that we will introduce the Diamondbacks catcher. He's our big guest this week on Episode 18.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Well, kind enough to join us here in the visiting radio booth at Coors Field as we await out more weather here in Denver. It's Tuffy Gozowich, Diamondbacks catcher, who has made his way up from the clubhouse. I guess it was pretty boring. We're recording this on Tuesday. I guess it was a long night for you guys down there last night, huh?
Yeah, really long night. You know, just sitting there waiting. We didn't get the word till it was delayed until about 30 minutes before the game was supposed to start. So everyone was ready to go, full uniform, and then they put the brakes on, and we sat around for a few hours.
And it looks like it's going to be like that again tonight. What goes on down there while you're just waiting aimlessly?
You know, there's a lot of different things. You know, some guys are just reading the paper. Some guys are watching TV, playing cards. We got a little game we play now called Bottle Cap Baseball. We got a
how does that work?
So Cliff Pennington went out and bought a little mini Nerf bat, and then we collect the water bottle caps. Uh-huh. And, you know, we just take them and, you know, one finger or something, you throw them, and we figure out actually how to throw some pretty nasty pitches. So we got, you know, 5, 6, 7 guys down there in the hallway before you get to the dugout, and we got a game of bottle cap baseball going, and it's pretty good, passes the time, and I think you actually probably get better hand-eye coordination, you know, and it's an easy way to practice.
You know, I saw the MLB Network. They did a feature on Jose Altuve, and they do that in Venezuela. They get, you know, it looks like beer caps or soda caps and all that, and he said it helped him along the way.
I believe it. You know, I never heard of it, but Penny said that they started it in Oakland, and he actually kind of forgot about it, and then this year once he had a bottle cap and he just threw it, and it just clicked in his brain that, oh, we used to do this, so let's just have some fun.
I guess for the makeup of a pitcher who could sit out a rain delay like that, you had the right guy going to the mound last night in Josh.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Nothing really phases him. I mean, he's the same guy no matter what happens. I think actually for about an hour and a half of the rain delay, he just sat in the dugout and just watched
it. Yeah, we showed him on TV a few times.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just sitting there.
I know, he was great.
He's a deep thinker.
Yeah. Yes.
I know there was a hitters meeting, too, yesterday. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know what? Mostly it was just trying to take the pressure off of us. I think when you're struggling, guys really take it to heart and put a lot of pressure on themselves. And, you know, you end up trying a little bit too hard. And I think that's what the message was, is, you know, just get back to what we're doing earlier in the season and have a solid approach and really just try to focus and battle and have a quality at bat every time you're up there and not try to focus on the results. And I think that, you know, whenever any team does that, I think they're going to be better.
What are some of the things you're working on right now offensively?
Personally?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, I feel pretty solid at the plate. I know the stats don't show it, but I feel like I've hit a lot of balls hard that have been caught. And, you know, I feel like I've competed pretty well. I've had a solid two-strike approach. And I really just want to continue to keep hitting line drives is my goal. And so if I can just, you know, have a solid stroke and put some solid contact on the ball, then I think that things will start to turn around a little bit. And that's all I've been really focusing on, is trying to stay short, you know, quick to the ball, and just continue to hit line drives, and things will work out.
Yeah, you had your run. I think you reached base the first 11 starts you had. It was like 1-for-4 every night. You can write it in stone.
Exactly. I know. I don't know what was going on, but I could only get one at a time. And then I thought I kept it going, and then they gave Prince an error on one ball that would have kept it going. you know, afterwards I looked at it, and that's what I read, that you know, it ended that night. I actually didn't know that anything was going on, and then we tried to get that call changed, and they wouldn't change it.
Everybody's got a hitting coach. Nowadays, everybody's got two hitting coaches. You have Turner Ward, you have Mark Grace.
Yes.
But beyond the hitting coaches, do you guys talk about hitting together, the position players?
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about hitting, and it's the first team I've been on where the players really – I mean, we really talk about hitting a lot, and everyone's different approach and what we think could work. And, you know, we have a meeting every day to go over the opposing starter, and the meeting is less about what the starter has and more about guys' personal experiences with that starter and how we as a team can attack him and hopefully get the best results. And if we go into a game and everyone has the same approach and we're really trying to focus on getting a pitcher, you know, either we're taking pitches, trying to make the guy work longer, or, you know, if it's a nasty guy, maybe it's Kershaw or Bumgarner, and you're not going to get too many pitches to hit. You know, you might have to be ready to hit from the very first pitch. So we talk about different approaches.
And your approach really worked against Kershaw last time. You know, you were taking a lot of balls the other way, but you were making him work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've had pretty good success against Kershaw at home.
Yeah.
At home. And so it's, you know, it's surprising. I don't know what it is exactly, but I think that we definitely
maybe familiarity.
See him a lot, and you know, try to take advantage of the first, you know, strike you get. And because if you wait till you got two strikes, I mean, you're done basically.
That's interesting that about those meetings. Usually, you would think that it's a coach up there. Okay, here's what this guy does. Here's the plan. Here's what we want to do. But it's more individual guys talking about their own personal experiences versus that guy that day.
Yeah. So it'll start with the Turner, you know, going over what he has and his pitches and velocity and stuff like that. But that's probably the first minute. And then the next, you know, 5 to 10 minutes is just guys talking about what they've seen from him in the past. You know, we got plenty of guys on the team that may not have seen a certain guy. So it's good to hear from other players what they see at the plate. Hmm. Because whatever you see at the plate is a little bit different than whenever you're watching on video or, you know, seeing from the dugout. And so it helps to have somebody who's seen a pitcher or, you know, had success against them especially.
How is it different?
Just the way the ball's coming in and how it comes out of his hand. So a lot of times you got a guy who's throwing 91, 92, and, you know, guys will come back to the dugout and say, man, it's playing firm, you know. So he's throwing 92, but we'll say it's playing, you know, 2 miles an hour harder, is playing 94, you know, because of deception or something like that. Or you have somebody who's throwing 98, and you're like, well, you know, it's pretty straight. I can see it early, and so it's 98, but you can see the ball pretty well. Hmm. And or, you know, out of his hand, a slider or a changeup, you might be able to pick something up in the box that you can't see from the dugout.
You know, offensively, I know your batting average isn't where you want to be right now, but defensively, behind the plate, calling a ball game, your ability to move out, block balls into the dirt, you've been outstanding defensively.
Thank you.
Do you feel like you're where you want to be defensively right now, or you can even get better? I mean,
yeah.
I don't see much how you can improve on it, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, I feel like calling a game, I can always improve. I think that's something that's constantly changing. We have, you know, some young pitchers, and it's always a work in progress for me, and trying to really understand the opposing team as much as possible. And that's something I focused on this year, is really trying to get to know the opponent and the best way to beat them. And, you know, I think that you saw it on Sunday against L.A. I thought we did a really good job. Chase executed what we called, and we just had a really good game plan going in, and you know, that's what you're hoping for.
Yeah,
you know,
that might be the best he's looked
at. Yeah, he really looked
good. In my opinion, I agree with that.
Yeah, he was terrific.
That's the best that I've seen him when I'm catching him. His fastball command was the best I've seen it to both sides of the plate, and I mean, you know, you say it every day, but if a guy has fastball command, then, you know, that sets up every other pitch, and they don't need to throw their off-speed pitches as much. You can get a lot of outs on fastballs, and, you know, I didn't look at the numbers, but I would venture to guess that the first three innings, he threw 90% fastballs, just a guess. But
why do you think, pardon me, that one troubling trend here with the Diamondback starting pitchers are these 20-plus pitch first innings? And it just seems to be an epidemic. Any idea? Is it just some fluky thing, or is there something really behind it?
I don't know if it's a mindset or I think that a lot of teams struggle in the first inning. I think pitchers, I don't know, statistically, I think that pitchers
first inning is usually bad for a lot of guys.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it's a mindset, maybe it's something we need to really key on, but I can think of a few games where, you know, you also are facing the opponent's best hitters. So there's a few games where, you know, we've had 12, 13 pitch at-bats in the first inning.
Yeah, a lot of foul balls.
To the second or third hitter, a lot of foul balls. And we got guys on our team that there's not a ton of guys that are blowing you away or have a for sure out pitch that are punching guys out. And so if you get a guy in the first inning, maybe the hitter's not really locked in yet, but he's good enough to where he can foul some pitches off. Now we're getting guys fouling balls off. We got a 12 pitch at bat, and you know if he gets on base, you still got to get three guys out after you've already thrown 12 pitches. I think it'll get better, but really just focusing on command and being ready to go as soon as the game starts.
There are guys that obviously are a little tougher to catch because maybe the sink on their ball, you're going to your knees and this and that. Who do you find most fun to catch, the starting pitchers? I mean, the guy that you really look forward to going out there and handling what he's got.
You know what? it's hard because
they're all different.
They're all different, but the most fun, I think, is Coley. Just because, you know, you look at him and he throws 83 to 86, and he breaks bats left and right and gets guys to, you know, pop up.
Hitters ever say anything to you about him? I mean,
I mean, I've had guys come up and say, you know, this guy owns me or something, you know. and I'm joking with him, you know. I'm like, you know, he throws 85, right? But with a good changeup and you're straight over the top, it's like you're hitting off Iron Mike. But, yeah, he's probably the most fun to catch because he puts it where you want,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I remember Bob Renly was raving in the Archie's debut when all those curveballs in the dirt, and you were – unbelievable back there, keeping that ball in front of you. Perfect block and recover every time.
Thank you.
It was something else. It really was. And that's when we really appreciate what we have with you behind the plate. I will always think back to that start, and you were diving left to your left, to your right, in the dirt. It must have happened a dozen times that day.
I think it actually was exactly a dozen. But, yeah, you know, I think Archie was pretty amped up. So
how good can he be? How good can he be?
He can be extremely good. You know, he's got 2-plus pitches right now. Change up, working on it, not bad. It's already gotten a lot better since spring training. So I think that he's going to end up with 3-plus pitches, and he's got a great mindset. You know, he worked really hard this year in spring. He was a different guy in spring than I'd seen the previous year.
I've got to ask you about your manager, Chip Hill, and we see him on a daily basis in the clubhouse with the team, on the field batting practice. You're with him in the clubhouse right before a ball game. You're in the dugout with him during a ball game. I think we've enjoyed watching him manage the ball club so far. The players, I mean, they seem to congregate to him. It looks like a good fit.
Yeah, no, I think he's a good fit. I think that he brings a lot of energy. I'm sure you've heard plenty of people say the same thing, but, you know, always energy, and he just wants the best out of his players, you know. And so whatever it takes to get the best out of his players, he's going to do it. And, you know, whether that's jump on you and get on your ass and – sorry, I probably can't
that's
say
all
that.
Right.
But
you can say
podcast, go crazy. Yeah.
So he has done that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's done that. Yeah. I mean, you know, and, you know, part of my job is to help the pitchers. And so if the pitchers aren't doing something they need to be doing, you know, then – usually I'm getting worn out about it,
sure.
And it's my job to relay that to the pitchers. And so, you know, he'll do whatever he has to do to get the best out of his players, and that's all he wants.
I'm going to go back to Archie for a second. You said he was a different guy this spring mm-hmm. than you had seen. What was exactly different with Archie this spring versus last year?
For me, his work ethic. You know, he came in and he said, look, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to make this team. And he did it. And he came to the park every day, and he worked his ass off. And so – you know, he's getting the opportunity that he deserves. He's got the stuff to do it, and I think he's got the mindset to do it now, and he just needs to keep doing that, you know, throughout his career, and he can continue to get better, and, you know, who knows how good he can be. He could be great. He's got the arm to do it.
And he's talked specifically about just turning his or the game plan when he's out there completely over to you and Hark and basically just nodding and doing whatever he's told. Can you tell us a little bit about that process before one of his starts?
Yeah.
His conversations?
I mean, so before the start, we go over the lineup every single hitter with me, Hark, and Archie. And we've been, you know, he knows what he has to do to the opposing lineup, but he trusts that I know the game plan as well. And he's shooken me off a couple times, but that's strictly because there's a certain pitch that he wants to throw at that time that he really, really believes in, or that he saw from the hitter that he needs to throw this pitch. But, I mean, you know, I think I've caught him, what, three starts now, four starts, and he's shaken me off less than five times. But I think that once he gets more comfortable and he sees these lineups over and over again, I think that he'll know what he has to do in his head, and he'll be more comfortable calling his game if he wants to shake off or if he doesn't.
You were back behind the plate last week when Cargo hit that ball. What was that? What's your memory of that moment?
It's still completely vivid in my mind, and it was horrible because I myself have broken my jaw. And that's the first thing that went through my mind.
Playing baseball?
Playing baseball. I got collision at home plate is how I broke mine. But I've also, my brother was in college, and one of his high school teammates was on his team in college, and his first start his freshman year, Ryan Mills. I don't know if you know the name, yeah. Ryan Mills. First start his freshman year, fastball right off the jaw, broken jaw. And so as soon as it happened, that's all I could think of is, you know, first of all, I hope he's conscious. And second of all, get the trainer out here because, you know, this could be devastating. And I got out to the mound, and he was talking, and I couldn't believe he was talking. And he just, you know, he just kept saying, oh, man, I'm so messed up. My mouth hurts so bad. And that's, you know, I was happy he was talking because that means he was able to talk. But, you know, two, I hope that all of his teeth were still in his mouth. And, you know, his
sure.
I thought, you know, there were multiple broken bones, and he was going to have his mouth wired shut. And I don't know how he got away with, you know, the small injuries he did, but I was extremely emotional out there, and it was hard the next few pitches to really get back into the game, and I had to really shake myself the next hitter and say, look, we got to focus on this hitter right here and get back to what we have to do.
Even the ball club did a tremendous job getting the hitter the rest
yeah,
of the
did
way.
That linger in the dugout for a few innings or the rest of the game? What was the rest of the game like for everybody?
I think that it was tough for everybody, but I think that they knew there's nothing we could do for him at that time other than just go out and keep playing. And you know, once the game was over, we would find out exactly what happened. And
he came back, in fact.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He came back, and he was there congratulating everybody when we got in from the dugout. So we did a great job of coming back that game.
One final thing for me, and you may know the numbers. I saw a stat the other day. They were talking about most collegiate players from one university on the Major League roster at the start of the season. Long Beach State had 12, but there are 11 Sun Devils out there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so yeah. I figured you probably knew. There are quite a few out there right now.
I knew there was right around 10 to 12. Yeah. I wasn't sure. But, yeah, I mean, we got some good talent out there, and I think we have 103 or 4 all-time.
It's funny because there was a stretch there where ASU kind of went down a little bit, but then it's trended up back upward again.
It really so has, yeah.
I know you keep up with the Sun Devils.
I'm excited, yeah. We had a tough series last weekend, but I think we lost 2-3 to Cal. Maybe.
I like that. It's a we forever. That's the whole point, right? It should be.
But we got UCLA this weekend, and they're number one in the pack right now, so – we take that series.
Not that you're following it.
No, not at all.
Well, you know, with one last thing on the D-backs here, it's been a good start, much better certainly than last year. And I think there's a lot of blessings to be counted here. And there's already series wins over the Giants. There's a
Dodgers.
Series wins over the Dodgers. A series win over the Rockies. So there's a lot to take from the first month of the season, I think. What do you take from the first month, Tuff?
You know, definite improvement. But at the same time, a lot to work on, just being more consistent. Those series that we did win, continuing to play the way we did in the following series. You know, I think that offensively, we were really good at the beginning, and we've just been up and down a little bit lately. I think that that's going to work itself out. I think in the field, I don't know if I've seen a more athletic team from top to bottom on the field. And so I think pitching-wise, we're going to get there. It's going to be a process, but you know, I really want to help this staff as much as I can. And, you know, I'm out here every day trying to get these guys to be as good as they can and, you know, hope that they realize how good they are and just continue to build their confidence.
Well, we appreciate your coming up here, and hopefully we get this
one
in tonight.
You stopped the rain.
You did.
Oh, yeah.
Brought some of that ASU sunshine.
There you go.
Don't worry, it'll start snowing soon.
Good.
Tuffy goes wish. Tuffy, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Take me out to the ball game.
Let's see what else is happening in the majors these days.
I don't believe what I just saw.
Time to go around the league.
Around the league, we've already mentioned the Houston Astros. As we record this, Houston is 18-8 and holding, if you can believe this, a 7-game lead.
Yeah, how about that?
Atop the American League West over the Angels and the Mariners.
How about that? And they're better on the road than they are at home right now. They're
the Astros are 10-2 on
that,
the road.
That was one road trip. That was a 12-game road trip. They went 10-2.
You know, they have Singleton in the minor leagues, their stud first baseman, but Chris Carter's hitting home runs. Evan Gattis is hitting home runs. They got the kid Springer. I love the way they went out last year and got Mariznick. Mm-hmm. Rasmus is playing okay for them, but they have Dallas Keuchel, who's the best ground ball pitcher in baseball. Colin McHugh's got that big curveball. They went out and got a couple of bullpen pieces last
year. Their bullpen's been really good.
And, yeah, I said they're not even any good. I mean that – they don't. You look at what they have, and
how are they doing? Is what you're asking.
It doesn't blow you away. The names and the talent we know about. You know, some of the young guys they have in the minor leagues, Correa and whoever.
Did you see their record in the division? They're 14-6 in the American League West.
I
think there's a problem in the American League West. Oakland is not playing well. The Angels are not playing well. Seattle's not doing what they need to do.
The Angels aren't any good. Now that's a team that's not any good. No, I mean it. I don't understand why everybody.
Angels are going to the World Series.
No, they're not.
The Angels are going to the World Series.
The Dodgers are toast.
They don't have any pitching. The Angels have no pitching.
Yeah, they've got their struggles.
Everybody liked the Angels coming out of spring training. I don't get it. They don't
now,
have any pitching.
If you want to say a team, and I hate saying they're not any good, but if you want to see a team that struggled, Texas is out of it.
Well, they lost Darvish.
I know, but what I'm saying is the Angels, Profar, Seattle, and Oakland, Houston may very well win that division, and they may very well run away with that division.
I still think Seattle's the best team in that division.
Well, they're sure not playing like it.
I think they'll be better. They'll be better.
Well, they need Taijuan Walker to pick it up like he did early spring. Yeah. He's been horrible.
The Tigers are 17-9 atop the AL Central. I still don't.
That's a two-team race.
I will
right
never
now.
Believe in the Tigers. They don't have a bullpen now. They've lost Nathan.
What's his name? He's got 10 saves.
Soria's been okay. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in the Tigers. I'm sorry. I just don't.
How about you believe Minnesota? How about them? They're 2/500.
Let me tell you right now, Minnesota.
They play the game right. They play the game well.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen them. I should. Haven't seen them yet this year, so I don't know how Molitor is managing, but that system has as much talent organizationally as any in baseball.
Yeah. And who's the outfielder that's still not getting it done?
Buxton.
Yeah,
they've got Osvaldo Arcia, right, who I like a lot, who's kind of a little baby Manny Ramirez from the left-hand side.
Trevor Plouffe.
Trevor Plouffe, good player. They're not going to win that division, there's a lot of talent in that system. The team that I don't get in that division is the White Sox. What's going on there? 8-14.
There's a lot of questions about Robin Ventura and his future.
Everybody loved the White Sox coming out of spring training, and they're really scuffling right now. The Yankees are 16-10, leading the American League
That's
East.
A little surprising to me because they didn't really do a whole lot in the offseason. Well, they got problems. You know, Steven Drew and Didi Gregorius are both playing, and they're both not hitting.
They are really down on Didi in New York. He's getting it in the newspapers pretty good. Pineda's pitched well for them. The Tanaka thing, you knew that was coming. You can't pitch with a tear in your elbow ligament. Sorry, I don't know why they thought they could get away with it. Mm-hmm. But they're 16-10.
And the back end of their bullpen's really good, too.
Well, the comp with Miller and I'm blanking. Betances.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. That's really good.
They have a lead there. It's lock it down.
And Boston's got no starting pitching. Wade Miley has not pitched well at all.
He's really struggled.
Yeah. But he's not the only one.
Yeah. Joe Kelly, who throws as
Porcello's
hard as anybody.
Been hit and miss.
And they gave Porcello all that money before
Clay
he
Buckles
threw a pitch.
Is Clay Buckles simply.
Clay Buckles, the Theon Greyjoy of the American League East. You guys will appreciate that Game of Thrones reference, I'm sure. I'm a little surprised Tampa Bay is 14-12.
Actually. Yeah, I mean, name five Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, Souza. Souza was a nice pickup, the kid they got from the Nationals.
But they're doing a nice job. You got to give them credit for being over 500 at this time.
So that's the American League in a nutshell. How did I get in this crazy nutshell? The other weird thing is the Mets. Now, it looked like for a while they might not lose a game for the rest of the year.
They got pitching.
But they've lost 7 of their last 10 as we sit here and record this show. So they're really on a roller coaster ride. They're 11-3 at home, the Mets.
Washington has been a disappointment, but there's too much talent on that team, to say that they're not going to contend. And I guess Rendon's had a little setback.
They're
right
not going to contend.
You don't think so?
I've never bought them ever. The pieces don't fit and something is missing. Well, something's missing from that team.
There's a lot. Well, you might be right on that, but there's still a lot of talent.
It's an intangible thing. They keep throwing money at it, and I've said this on the show a bunch of times. That team will not win the World Series.
Let me ask you a question.
I guarantee they won't win the World Series.
Would they have
guarantee.
The guts to trade either Strasburg or Bryce Harper?
Yes.
And get a big package in return?
Yes, I think they
And
will.
How much is a big package?
Because the more this doesn't work, and
they're going to lose Zimmerman probably at free agency.
And Desmond.
Who started out like he knew he was going to be a free agent and was
exactly.
really.
They're 13 and 14. The more that doesn't work, and it's only going to get worse because Rendon's going to miss a lot of time now, the more pressure is going to be on Mike Rizzo in that front office. So I think they will make some kind of bold move to try and save it because I think that's what it's going to take because something is missing from that team. I don't know what it is, but it's just not
well,
there.
Well, I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but since they were both first picks, Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg have not put up the numbers that I thought they would be putting up by now.
I think that's fair. Strasburg is still a really good pitcher, but he's not what everyone thought he would be, Nolan Ryan.
Right.
And I don't even
probably
know
if, too much expected of
right,
him.
Right, and I don't even know if that's fair.
He's a quiet kid. I think he just wants to go out and pitch and have fun. And I don't know if he's
like
having
he
fun
hasn't
right
pitched
now.
Well. It's not like
right. No, it's not like he's got bad numbers.
And you nailed it. He's not having fun.
No.
It doesn't look like he's having fun. And that speaks to the point that I'm trying to articulate is when you watch that team, it just jumps out at me. Whatever you need to win a championship, that team does not have.
We know Maddie very well, and I'm sure he's pulling his hair. Well, he doesn't have any hair.
Hello.
But you know what I'm saying? We'll talk to Matt Williams when the Diamondbacks play the Washington Nationals at home.
Another big disappointing team in that National League East is Miami at 12-14.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody liked what they did. D. Gordon might win a batting
he
title.
He might hit 500 this year.
It's playing out of his mind. But Latos hadn't worked out all that well.
He's been horrible.
Yeah, there was some pressure on Redmond from management earlier in the year.
Well, what's his name got hurt, too, the starter. Their number two guy, really good, threw the no-hitter a couple of years ago.
Alvarez?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wilson, not Wilson Alvarez.
Henderson
Alvarez is out. Fernandez is out. But they've still got a lot of talent on that ball club.
Yes.
Right now it's not clicking.
Yeah, they do. And
Yelich has been
Yelich
out.
Has
that's
been
hurt.
Hurt
him.
Yeah,
but
that's
he's
really
back.
Hurt.
He's supposed to return here shortly.
He's special, Yelich.
I think one of the biggest disappointments has been Milwaukee in the Central, and they made a managerial move. Ron Renick, they had the collapse at the end of last season. They got off to a bad start this year, and Craig Counsell, the two-time Diamondback, is now a skipper in that ball club.
See, I see that. I don't see that as a disappointment at all. I thought that they would be terrible.
I didn't
and they
see
are.
Them going what they are. And they're,
I did.
They won three in a row. Otherwise, they were 5-18. I didn't see
look,
that.
Look, I'm no genius, but I looked at that team and go, where's the pitching on this team? They got no pitching on that team. None.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Garza None. and Loesch.
Yeah. You're going to win with those guys?
Well, you're going to win 14 or 15 ballgames with those guys.
I thought this is exactly what would happen with the Brewers. I don't get it. Same with the Angels.
They were counting on young kids like Nelson and Fiers to come in
Nelson
and be stabilizers on those.
Yeah, those guys are okay. They're not.
But they thought, the organization thought those guys were going to be replacements for a guy like Gallardo.
Well, the organization
gone.
Was incorrect.
Well, they obviously.
Yeah.
And and Ron Renicki paid the price for it. Why they collapsed so late last year? Give me the answer on that one.
Same reason. They're not any good now.
Well, they were pretty good last year
Segura
for a long time.
Segura went in the tank last year. I don't know what happened to him. Jeanette hasn't hit this year.
He's back now, so we'll see. Yeah. I mean, he's been out of the league.
Cardinals.
Luke Roy is out.
Cardinals 19
Cardinals
and
are going to win that division.
Even
Cubs
without,
are hanging around.
Even
but,
without Wainwright, 19 yeah. and 6. And the Cubs have been fun. They'll continue to be fun. The Reds, I kind of put the Reds in the same boat as the Brewers. They're just going to go backwards, Cincinnati.
They're going to trade Johnny Cueto.
They've lost.
They got to get something.
They're going to have to punt on Cueto. They've lost Bailey.
They may trade Jay Bruce.
And maybe Phillips. That team's going nowhere. Mm-hmm. That team's going nowhere.
They could probably get something, but I don't know if they want to deal him. But they, you know, a lot of teams are looking for a third baseman. They could probably get something pretty good for Todd Frazier.
The Brewers and the Reds. Those are two teams that are going to have to blow it up.
Segura's the guy who might go.
You're going to have to blow the whole thing up, I think, in both places. You're going to have to move some guys, some
they
key
might
guys.
Even, Milwaukee may even try. I say may even try, and I don't know if they'd have any buyers to try to trade Ryan Braun.
Yeah. You've got to try anything at that point because that's a rebuild.
And both the top two guys who I mentioned, Loesch and Garza, will probably be gone.
That's a tear down and a rebuild
yeah, yeah.
in Milwaukee, and I think they're headed
How good
the same
is their minor
way
league organization?
Not very good at all.
Pittsburgh's been a little bit of a disappointment. You know, McCutcheon's not hitting. Harrison's not hitting right
McCutcheon's
now.
Hurt.
Yeah, but okay.
But let me tell you this. I watched. There was a game where we played him and they swept where McCutcheon hit a triple. Or he scored. He either scored from first. I'm trying to remember now.
He scored from first. Well. Yeah.
He scored from first on a base hit to the gap, and he could barely move. He was limping around badly. He's not healthy, and he's not going to get healthy, I don't think. It's the kind of thing where he just needs time off.
Harrison's
and they
really
can't afford
struggling
to give him
right
time
now.
Off.
And that's the guy who was so big for him last year. I don't even think he's hitting 200 right now.
Yeah, he was a real key for them last year, that's for sure. So they're 12-13. I don't think that's going to get better for Pittsburgh because I don't think McCutcheon's leg is going to get better. In the West, 16-9. I don't know how the Dodgers are doing it. They're 13-2 at home.
Yeah.
And Jock Peterson is going to be a little bit of a thrill ride for them because we've seen first of all, the power is stupid. Yeah. The power is stupid.
What, he had 3 home runs against the Diamondbacks and he struck out 8 or 9 times?
I mean, a little hanging changeup that he hits 450 feet. He didn't even swing hard. He just drops the bat head on that thing and it goes 450 feet. But he's always been a guy that struck out about 30% of the time, which is a lot in the minor leagues. And the strikeout rate has gone up every year for him. And I think even in that game Sunday we saw, he was just up there swinging out of his shoes. So you're going to see a little bit of that, I think, with Jock Peterson this year.
And I think with the Padres, their pitching really hasn't gotten going yet. Compared to what they're starting pitching from.
James Shields gave up a bunch of home runs to these Rockies on Sunday. Kimbrel gave up a
Kennedy
home run.
Spent time on the DL. But, you know, right now their offense, they're getting what they thought they were going to get from Upton, Kemp, and Myers. Myers, I think, leads the league in runs scored. So, and we haven't heard too many complaints about that ball club defensively in the outfield.
No, they've been okay.
Yeah.
Been okay.
So,
but when you watch Myers play center, you go, this guy can't do it.
All three guys in the outfield, really. Justin has never been a great outfielder. He's playing left field right now.
Exactly.
Myers, you watch him play center, then Kemp.
But they're getting by.
Exactly.
They're getting by.
Yeah.
And they should get credit
for
that.
So if their starting pitching ever gets going, then you feel like they're going to take off a little
bit. One more thing on the Padres, and I mentioned this before on this show. What really impressed me when they went out and got all those guys is they did it and they kept their starting rotation intact and they kept all of their top prospects. And the two guys they kept that I really like are Hunter Renfro, who's a big bat, and Austin Hedges.
Who just came up.
Austin Hedges is a tremendous defensive catcher. And they might end up moving Derek Norris to first base at some point this year. I think you'll probably see that. Norris will move out from behind the plate to first base to get that bat in there and let Austin Hedges do his thing. He's only 22 years old. He's really, really good.
Well, to bring him
catcher.
Up right now, in this situation, they obviously are—they're obviously content that he can handle his own in the big leagues,
at least defensively. Right. And I don't know if he can hit enough to defend himself. Right. I don't know. He's never been a great hitter.
He's
but
up
boy,
now,
he
and the kid from Boston's up too. Swihart.
Blake Swihart.
Yeah, Swihart. Yeah,
yeah. Swihart is. So. Swihart's got a special skill set that you don't see a lot of in a catcher. He's a superstar.
He can run a little bit. I was watching him run down the line.
He can
run a little bit.
He's a unique guy, Blake Swihart, and he's a guy to watch.
Good to see young talent come up and see what they can do.
As far as these Rockies go, Gub, 11-13, it's the same old story.
They can hit.
John Gray is really struggling in the minor leagues. That I think they're going about it the way they have to, which is to draft pitching in the first round and develop and grow their own staff. And they have guys like Matzik and Butler and Gray. Butler has not worked out at all. Gray's really struggling in the minor leagues. Matzik has looked good. Has looked good. But unless they hit on all those guys, I think it's going to be the same old Rockies.
Yeah, because
seen.
Kyle Kendrick is not. You know,
he's been a disaster.
Yeah,
just a flat-out disaster.
And De La Rosa's, you know, he hurt more than he's
right.
He pitches really well in this ballpark, Coors Field, but you know, Ottavino the loss. But you gotta have leads to get your closer into the ballgame.
Yeah.
How about the Diamondbacks? They've only got one save all year.
I think that speaks to the offense that's come in bunches. When they win games at 10-14, they're winning, putting up some runs here. Diamondbacks 6-8 at home, 4-6 on the road. I think we're just waiting for Jake Lamb to get healthy and Chris Owings to figure it out. And I think once those two things happen, I think it'll really change the complexity of this ball.
And the Diamondbacks to get the home field advantage back. They've struggled the last 2 years winning games at home. And if you're going to win and if you're going to start moving, you got to protect your own turf. And they're not doing that.
Well, if we ever play any games here at Coors Field,
it's pretty ballpark to look at.
It is, but it's pouring rain here, and the weather just sucks.
Grass
frankly.
Is really green from all the rain.
Yeah,
they've needed the rain up here.
So
though,
maybe we'll get some games in Wednesday, and then it's home for 4 against the Padres. Mm-hmm. And that does it for another edition of D-Backs Podcast.
Leo, you were really good today.
Leo, I thought episode 18 was your strongest show.
I tried. I was busy. I was actually...
He had to be... he was rushed.
When we got the word that Tuffy Gozlewicz was going to be able to join us up here, Leo went into... it was
panic
like,
mode.
It was like scrambling fighter jets on an aircraft carrier.
Well, that's
you ever
I
seen
shine.
The,
that's
remember
what I
the
shine.
Opening montage of Top Gun?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was you running and hooking things into the floor and the wires and everything, and you were like the opening sequence of Top Gun.
We've all seen Top Gun. That's unlike some of us who haven't seen Godfather.
We won't
mention Money's name.
We gave Money a homework assignment. I'll be interesting to see when we get back if he went ahead and watched Godfather.
I'm sure
he'll have quotes and everything.
He said he would.
Yeah.
You know.
I just want to make it so the World Series will be Washington and
yeah.
I guarantee
Detroit.
In Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or the Angels.
That's,
the Angels.
That's,
yeah.
I
Washington
guarantee
the
that
yeah.
the Nationals.
2 years ago,
you
said
here.
The Dodgers are toast.
That was
they
2 years
are
in a
history.
Row. That was 2 years in a row.
And boom, they took off.
At least I bring stuff to the table, man. That's my hot take. You know, you got to have a hot take, don't you? What's your take?
Yeah. What'd you say the Astros were?
They were bad.
They're not any good.
Yeah, they're not any good. Good. That's
they're
it.
Good.
We got to write that one
I know.
Down. Not
I,
any good.
I want,
they're not any good.
Listen to me. I want and I
they're
gave,
not any good.
I gave them full credit before. They're getting it done. They're getting it done, and I'll take Keuchel and
but
McHugh.
They're not any good.
Look, I
for a team that's not
all right.
Any good,
all right,
good
smart guy. Let me just ask you that. I'll close with this thought, smart guy. Do you really think? Hold on. I'm gonna get the standings up because I just lost it here. As
I guess the question is,
oh,
are
no.
you buying into Houston Astros baseball?
I'm going to give you the question right now. Do you really think that the Houston Astros, who are 18-8, and the Diamondbacks, who are 10-14, do you really think that a month into the season that the Astros are 8 games better than the Diamondbacks?
Well, they are.
No, but are they really? Is that
in the
legit?
Long run, you're saying?
Is that a mirage?
They've
are they,
gotten better
are they that
pitching.
Much better a team? Forget the number. I gave you the number, but it's not about the number. Are
What's
they really,
it about then?
Are they really that much better than the Diamondbacks?
Right now they are.
You're
being, I don't know how to answer your question.
You're being too literal.
You're saying right now, what you're asking more is in the long haul. Through
yes,
the course of this season,
right.
Will the Houston Astros
Thank
be
you,
eight
Leo.
Games better
Once again, you've articulated my thoughts perfectly.
Yeah. That's what he's saying. You're projecting for the year. Do
don't look at the. Don't get all hung up on the numbers. The numbers are – and they get credit for all of it. They get full credit for 18-8. They deserve it. I mean, 10-2 on the road this year, the Astros. But are they really that much better than the Diamondbacks?
I don't know if they're
yes
that much
no.
better.
That's my point. That's all I'm saying. I don't think they are.
So what does that accomplish?
Right now they are. Yeah, we.
Well, you're digging in like.
Well, you said they were no good.
They're not.
They're not.
They're not.
Good.
They shouldn't be winning. Let me say this. They're not a team that's so good they should have a 7-game lead in the division on May the 5th.
We better cut this podcast off, or we're going to run into the next
you're
one.
Saying they're saying they're a mirage.
Yeah. Well, they might be. Look, hey, 2 weeks ago the Mets were unbeatable. Now they can't win a game. So,
well, let's see what. We'll probably record the next podcast, I guess, in Washington, huh? On the next road trip,
we go
Philly and Washington. But
Philly,
got an off day Thursday,
Philly,
Friday,
Miami, isn't it?
Philly, Miami. I mean, we'll do it in Miami.
We'll do a beachside,
and then we'll see what Miami. Houston. We'll have to remember Houston at this podcast was 18-8. We'll see what their record is. And we'll also see what the Angels and Tigers are.
I'm not saying they're a bad team. They're just not that much better than the Diamondbacks. Okay. They're just not.
We can move
they're
on.
Not that bad a team, but they're not any good.
Yeah.
See, you guys. As always, thank you for your patience, listeners and downloaders. Don't forget, fans, you can follow the Diamondbacks on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the whole thing. A couple of announcements. The D-backs will be hosting Star Wars Day at Chase Field on July 18th. First 20,000 fans get a very unique item. This really is a one-of-a-kind thing. It's an A.J. Pollock bobblehead, courtesy of Cox
nice.
Communications. But it's an A.J. Pollock Star Wars bobblehead with A.J. dressed up as a young Jedi Knight and wielding? I think it's wielding. Not a
wielding.
Baseball bat, but a lightsaber.
Wielding.
He's dressed as a young Jedi with a lightsaber. It's a very cool bobblehead. Good sound effects. Sound effects courtesy of Greg Schulte. That's a 5-10 start against the Giants on July 18th. And fans, Gub, and broadcasters as well, encouraged to dress as their favorite Star Wars character and participate in a special pregame parade on the field.
Don't forget also about Throwback Thursdays, and we got one that's coming right. up when
yeah,
we go home.
First one, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
For the purple.
Tickets still available for July 18th, 602-514-8400. Get tickets online, dbacks.com/Star Wars.
You know the one we're really looking forward to, though, because we're all going to wear it, is the fedora.
I'll wear the fedora.
The fedora. It looks pretty good.
D-back
I'm
fedora.
Anxious to that. That's coming up in May here, right?
Fedora,
Leo?
That's
coming
your
up.
Style.
Absolutely. Well, I will definitely have the fedora.
You can pull that off.
Candy even said he's looking forward to the fedora.
Candy's an idiot.
He didn't know what a fedora was.
Leo and I will. Leo and I will look.
Houston's not any good, and Candy's an idiot all in one show.
I'm sorry. Am I wrong about that?
you tell him that. I'm not.
Leo and I will look like hipsters in fedora.
Leo looked good in a fedora.
No.
Have you ever had a fedora?
I've never had one. I've had mixed results on how I look in them.
Also, between now and Monday, there is a time element involved on this. Fans can celebrate Paul Goldschmidt winning the National League Player of the Week
honor
last week.
This is a pretty neat deal.
We should have mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, this is
That's
pretty
a
neat
bad
deal.
Job by you to not mention that. You can celebrate by going to dbacks.com/vote. All right, enough with put your lightsaber away. As the D-backs are giving away a limited edition watch, and it's the same actual wristwatch, seriously, that has been awarded to National League Players of the Week. You can enter to win the watch by voting for Goldie at least 31 times between now and Monday. And the clock is ticking, as you can hear. Goldie gets presented with the watch from Game Time Incorporated, the leader in licensed sports watches, available at MLB.com. You can win the same watch. Just vote for Goldie at dbacks.com/vote at least 31 times between now and Monday. One other note, with the temperature hitting 100 degrees back home in the valley, hard to believe here in Denver, it's freezing and rainy. D-backs are discounting bleacher tickets for the series against the Nationals next week. That's May 11 through 13. You can get bleacher seats for $10 for 100 hours. Time is running out, however.
I think it's run out.
By the time this is posted, it may have run out.
Yeah. Well, check it.
Tuesday at 7, I believe
it was. Okay, so you might, if you can post this thing quickly enough, we'll beat the Tuesday at 7.
Post it,
that'll be out of Leo's
hands.
Listen
to it quick enough.
Yeah. Try it anyway, dbacks.com/tickets for
the
discount.
It was the thought that counted.
Enter the offer code 100 degrees and you'll get a $10 bleacher seat for the National Series. I don't remember getting as little support from you guys on a show as I have today.
Well, you say some goofy things.
Sorry. Follow D-backs Podcast on the Twitter at D-backs Podcast for news about upcoming events and guests and links and the whole thing. D-backs Podcast brought to you by Beverages by Hoffman, by Martin Paints at Anxious Paints, and Monsters by Stripes.
That's a favorite one.
For the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor Greg Schulte, and the Kingslayer, Leo Gilmartin. You don't have a sound effect.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah. I'm Steve Berthume. Thanks for listening and downloading this episode 18. We will talk to you again soon here on D-backs Podcast. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.